Welcome to this edition of When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine, a discussion of sustainable living and what that means to you and me. I'm Jay Warmke.
I'm Annie Warmke.
And today we're going to talk about future trends in sustainability, or don't follow me, I'm lost too, right? Okay, so
I'm going to remind you of that.
I need no reminding. I just need to look up periodically and say, where am I? So, all right, so let's talk a little bit, because we discuss sustainability ad nauseum and at Bluegrass Station.
Ad nauseum. I don't know what that means. I don't care either.
All right, so I'm trying to bring a little culture to this. So anyway, so when we talk about the various aspects of sustainability, there are a whole lot of broad categories. So let's try and hit these things kind of one by one.
Okay, but before we do, to say,
I knew I wasn't going to get to my list.
I don't care about statistics.
Right.
Those can be manipulated, and who does the study? That's what I want to know. So what we're going to talk about today is really the things that we see as we read different news generation things, like, you know, some newspapers, some magazines, and just also listening closely to people who cross our threshold and visit
us. So what you're doing is level setting, saying none of these projections have anything to do with any scientific research.
Not so. We're doing scientific research all the time. All right. What I'm getting at is that this is just our conversation,
right.
and it's absolutely factual. There's nothing made up, and it's not fake news. How's
there
that?
There you go. Okay. Well, speaking of fake
news. It's our news from Blue Rock Station.
Speaking of fake news, let's talk about communication.
Okay.
Right. We are a world dependent upon communication, yet we don't seem able to communicate with each other.
Well, we're a world dependent on consumption communication. We wanna sell stuff, and nobody's off the charts for that.
Okay. So in the world of sustainability, what do you see coming down the pike at us? We've seen this ever progressing march of media coming at us, ever improving.
No, it's not a march. It's a bombardment.
Okay.
Really amazing, like smacking you in the chest everywhere you go. There's TVs, there's radio, there's social media, there's the rectangle staring at you, beeping at you.
Right. So do you see people then fighting back against this?
I think so. And I see a rejection. I'm fascinated with the fact that there are actually not just old people, but also younger people going to flip phones, where they don't want to have the technology tracking them, although it is tracking them, but they don't want all of that. They just want some simple thing to communicate with, and then they're going to use a real camera to take pictures if they need something. And I think we hear young people all the time at Blue Rock Station saying, I left my phone here or I'm taking a break for a week from social media, or I don't do social media anymore, or I'm reading a real book that I hold in my hand. So I think there's a backlash, and I think that backlash is going to keep coming. And I know I said I wasn't going to stay as statistic.
I was just going to mention, you were telling me about the statistic about e-book sales declining significantly while real book sales are going up.
10% a year, real book
10%.
Sales are increasing. So this
Well, you
is
know,
good
10%
news.
Of statistics are just made up. So.
Well, the other 10% weren't.
There you go. Okay, so I can see that. I mean, I've always maintained a book is a really good technology. I mean, it's portable, it's transferable. You can read it when the electricity goes off. It's a good technology. Nothing wrong with it. So we tend to get carried away when we say, okay, just because we can do a thing, it's going to be done.
That's right. It must. Well, it makes money. It makes money.
Well, to some people. But what we're saying is, okay, as these technologies become more intrusive, more annoying, more pervasive, people will become momentarily Amish, right?
No, I don't think. I don't know if that's a good analogy. I don't think it's momentarily Amish. I think that what people will say is, I know I'm going to try to decide what I need and what I don't need, and I'm going to sort that out. And I'm not sure how that's going to impact younger people who really don't know life without those things. I think what it does is create an act of rebellion on their part. And we all know that anybody under 20, for the most part, likes to have some acts of rebellion. So I'm just wondering what that's going to mean to our consumption-generating corporations in the next decade.
Well, let's hope it's significant change. So, okay, moving on, speaking of consumption, see, I'm making these bridges. What about food? How do you envision, because again, if I go back and say, all right, we've gone from a society where people or their neighbors created food and consumed it themselves or shared it with people who were nearby, to now a food industry that is global and highly processed and highly industrialized. So that has been the post-World War II to today, the last 50 years of progress. So where do you see us going with that?
Well, I think we're going to see lots more local food.
So everything old is new again.
Well, all we have to do, at least for me, is to look back and see how my grandparents lived when they were maybe in their 30s and 40s before all the things started changing with the industrialization of food. So I think we're going to see more farmers markets, better farmers markets, more buying locally and directly from farmers. I think we're going to see a lot of farms going out of business because they're mismanaged, and they've always maintained bigger is better and bigger is not better, and it's not sustainable. I also think that we're going to gain a lot more access to good food because there is going to be interruption. There's going to be a lot of issues coming that will interrupt
food. And by interruption, do you mean like we've seen some E. coli outbreaks,
or just industry distribution? Maybe the grid goes down and there's no gas to ship stuff. All it'd take a day, and it would just be amazing what would happen. So we're going to become more dependent on each other and what we can produce, and I think that's a really great thing. And there's some of that going on now, but I think we have to kind of come back to it.
Well, I tend to agree. I think we've got a lot of – we've talked a bit about in other shows about the natural disasters and right. how climate change is affecting those things. Well, climate change, but also just the inevitability of highly industrializing what you're putting into your body. We're going to have some major catastrophic outbreaks. I mean, we have them already, but they don't seem to quite be of a point to bring it into the forefront of our consciousness. But I think it'll just take a few of them, and people are going to start to question whether they can really count on the safety of the food that they're buying at the grocery store.
But I don't even think – I mean, yes, I believe that's true. I think that's one thing. But I also think the disruption of the food chain where the food cannot be distributed. So it isn't just about that it's poisoned, but that it isn't even available, because people surprise me even today of how close they live to this line of they don't have enough in their house to eat. And they're not poor people. They just don't put food up. You know, they don't preserve food. They don't have they don't even have food in their freezer.
Right. And if you talk about the city as an organism.
Yes.
I mean, I don't remember the right statistic, but it's like there's 2 days worth of food or so.
Yeah, but it's not, that's not very much. And it's like people also have lost the skill sets to produce food in a way that you can like take leftovers and do something else with it and things like that. So there isn't even the ability to make proper food. And I do think one of the trends, at least I see, is that we're going to need to go back to some form of home economics so that young people can learn how to care for themselves. And I don't think that's happening right now. But I also think that we're going to have, and these trends are, you can go online and look this up, but as far as meat and dairy consumption, that is decreasing every single year now. And there's a lot of complaining about the fact that people are eating less meat and dairy. And of course, the meat and dairy industry is going after the meatless industry and the almond milk people saying they can't use the word milk and trying to create definition. And they're actually passing legislation in a number of states and have won passing this legislation to stop the almond milk people from saying milk or the meatless people, you know, tofu Tofurkey. Can't, you know, after 30 years, they're not allowed to use that term or something. I don't know. But the reality is we are eating less meat. We are eating less dairy. And what do those trends mean? Well, maybe we eat more fake food, or maybe we just eat more plant-produced food.
Well, it strikes me in, where we're sort of heading in all of this. When we talk about the technologies, people reject it. Some of the technology infrastructure is collapsing under its own weight. Well, I can't seem to get an internet signal out of their home.
Oh, my gosh.
Things like that. So we see that there are pockets, the urban settings or the affluent urban settings, have access to a lot of things. So it with the technology and with the food system, we're creating, again, the haves and the have-nots. And it's largely based on the zip code where you live, you know, your economic situation and your location, proximity to other people, where concentration makes it economic to provide.
In urban areas that are food deserts. And a food desert is not having access to a real grocery store within 2 miles. So we actually live in a food desert.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think that's a trend that we'll see accelerating and continuing. Is this the haves and the have-nots becoming more pronounced? And this will be a template to lay over every one of these trends that we put in. Because those people who are educated and have the resources, you know, they're entering into this brave new world of amazing opportunity. Those people who are not accessible to these resources become more and more ghettoized, you know, in so many different ways. And as we've talked about, where government can be seen as the great, great equalizer, does not seem to be stepping up to the plate.
Well, they're not coming to help.
Right. Well, we can see
that. They encourage it. They really do encourage it.
Okay, so speaking of not coming, this is another good transportation. There we go, transportation. How are we going to get there from here? So what's new? What's new in store and transportation as Annie sees it?
Well, one is that this does not take a rocket scientist to figure out that gas is cheap now, but it is not going to stay there. And I believe that the Saudis are paying us back for us not putting up with some of their big lies and their torture of
others.
You
mean we're being rewarded for putting up with these
things? Oh, I don't think we're being rewarded at all. I think we're being led down the tube.
Okay, so you're saying, okay, we're going to make you dependent once again on cheap fuels.
Yeah.
Then we're going to yank the carpet out.
Yeah, we are.
Cynical person.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what they're doing. And they got a lot of a lot of oil, and they can do it. And then people are going to race out and buy these vehicles. And fortunately, the other trend, and then they're going to knock the socks off of us with the price. But that's right. Okay. I think that's a positive thing, because the car companies, all the major car companies, are repositioning themselves to have electric vehicles and hybrid vehicles. And that is going to save us. So the Saudis can do whatever they want, but we're going to be in a better position.
Well,
in the
save
long
us,
run.
Save us for the time being, because every trend solves a problem and then turns around and
absolutely,
and creates another problem. Okay. Well, you have been listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke, reminding you once more that it is indeed the end of the world as we know it, and
Thank God.
Okay, so we're not done yet, man. We've got the future to worry about. So we've been talking about transportation, and we're talking about, okay, transportation, gas prices going up. It's disruptive, the feast or famine kind of situation of fossil fuels moving towards an electric transportation. And then one of my possible future trends, I mean, we in this sustainability industry love mass transit. None of us actually use it, but
we don't have access to it. We love the idea of it. We're in love with it.
Even when it works, you know, when it's available, we like the convenience of our own vehicle.
Well, you and I love to commiserate about how much we love to ride the trains in Europe.
Right. But that was very convenient. But if you're talking about people in general, not strange psychopaths like ourselves, who like
I know psychopath. Right,
probably not the right word, but so anyway.
No, I agree. That is not the right
word. That's a
word
I reserve for your goats. So anyway, we tend to like the convenience of going where we want to go and getting there when we want to get there. And I think what we're seeing is a conversion of technologies that will allow for individualized mass transit. And that's a concept that I think is we're taking baby steps towards there. Uber is an example. I don't have to own a car whenever I want to get somewhere. I just call up Uber and they show up and take me where I want to go. If you happen to live in a city, you know, where Uber is available and things like that. But there are a lot of folks now in our society who simply look at the automobile as an option as opposed to a necessity. Then we're moving towards driverless vehicles.
But back up, because I'm thinking of being in Paris and in London, where they have converted to, like, I think every taxi driver I saw in Paris had a Prius hybrid.
Right.
And they had recharging stations for bicycles, and the bicycles were there, so it was they were government-owned. And the thing about Uber is the picture I have when you're saying that is all these individual cars racing around, and there are a lot more of them. And that is kind of like destroying the whole concept of sustainability.
Well, we had this thought, okay, if people aren't going out to buy their own cars, there'll be less traffic. What ends up happening is the Uber driver's driving around looking for somebody to pick up. So there's a lot more traffic on the road. So I'm not saying these things are solving any problems. I'm just saying this is a trend where we're going to look towards individualized mass transit, whether that be vehicles driven or autonomous, bicycles. We see that in some places where you can just, you know, put money in a slot, take a bike, drive where you want to go, ride where you want to go,
and then leave it.
There's
a couple of Chinese companies that are doing that really big in some cities.
There are some of those rental car places that are like that, too. You just rent a car, and there's a car park somebody.
Right. In Columbus, you can do that.
Right. Now, southeastern Ohio is not only a food desert. We're a desert when it comes to all these innovations. So, once again, the haves and the have-nots.
Well, we have other things that are important.
Yes. Beauty, fresh air, good food, charming people, and intelligent children. So those are all things that all these other places don't have.
I'm gonna remember that. Gosh, there's too many on the list now.
Right.
But I just think that
private mass transit, which seems to be an oxymoron, but I think it's something that you heard it here first. Okay, let's move on.
I heard it here first. Oh no.
So employment. Okay, what's the future of employment?
The future of employment is that if you want to have a life, so first of all, if you went to college, you probably are in debt for the rest of your life. And I just had dinner on the weekend with somebody who went to school to get her master's degree in accounting, and she has $170,000 in debt, $1,800 a month payment before she pays rent or anything. So she's in debt for the rest of her life, and that's the way it is. So,
and how old is this person?
Oh, like 28 or 29.
Okay.
So here's the other part of that, is that in order to live sustainably, forget the debt part for the moment, in order to live sustainably, I believe that we have to live very differently than we do now. For one thing, we need to not have one source for any one thing that we need, so we shouldn't have one source to heat our house. So why do we have one source for employment?
So you're moving towards the gig economy.
Well, I know that's what they call it, although it doesn't seem like it's terribly nice right now. But I think what has to happen is we have to have a different government that sustains some of this with us. So we're in partnership with the people who take the tax money. And so we need to have young people who have a couple of different sources. And here's of employment. And here's what happens then, that perhaps they actually do something that gives them a sense of accomplishment and makes them feel good about what they're doing, whether it's working for McDonald's or it's sweeping the streets. I mean, not everybody is going to end up doing, you know, being the rocket scientist. But the other flip side of that is that we need to have people feel good about what they're doing. And it is possible. For the other part of it is, has to do with training. You know, I see a trend towards us saying, look, we've got a couple of different groups that are in school besides the people going to university and the people that are just going to go out and do the laborer jobs. And in between there are some really brilliant people who need trade school. They need vocational education. They need mentoring. And so I think if we step up to the plate and look at that and say that's a solution, then the gig economy can work because people are in different jobs doing different things that appeal to them. It's not just you're just the laborer using your back to earn a living and you're not even making enough to pay for a place to live.
So what you're saying is the post-World War II idea or ideal of going out, getting a college education, going to work for a large corporation and having this unsaid contract between that company that I will devote all of my energies to you and you will take care of me until I die, basically.
Well,
that was the very idealist. Well, that was never a reality, but most of our ideals are never realities. But we're saying, okay, let's acknowledge the fact that the corporation doesn't care whether, you know, they'll use you, abuse you, and toss you away. So we see the idea that, you know, working to live, not living to work.
But that's the big piece where we are right now, that young people want to have more of a life. They've seen that, and they know it doesn't work, and they've been saddled with this debt. And so they're saying, look, I can't earn enough to even afford a car and a place to live. I can't afford children. So I want to have something that says I can have some leisure time. I want to have some time where I can just be myself instead of be owned by the person I work for. Mm-hmm. And I want to feel sustainable in what I'm doing. You know, lots of young people want to do composting and grow food. And, you know, I think it's a huge trend in our culture and it's just beginning.
Okay, so the big killer of choices, which you've mentioned several times, is debt.
Debt is prison. Debt is slavery.
And debt is the number one product sold in our nation. I mean, that is the product that is manufactured more than anything else. If you think about the debt industry as it exists, and, mm-hmm. and I think from historical standpoints, you know, at one point people did not go into debt. They worked, saved, and bought what it was they needed. There are certain purchases like homes and land that becomes almost a generational thing where you would have to work almost your whole life to save up for that. So there became a debt.
Or you inherited. So there's a different model than we have today.
Right. But then with the idea of being able to purchase a home on installment, that was a big advancement. And like most things that become a problem, in the beginning, they were not necessarily a problem. So then we get a revolving credit kind of thing for the purchase of things you would like to have now. The old company store idea, you know, that was a way of indenturing people to be indebted to the company.
It's the model we have now.
Yeah. So now the company store is your credit card. You know, you are working to pay off the debt against things that you're already used up and broke.
Well, you also borrowed money, say if you're in college or university, you borrowed money towards your future earnings. You didn't just borrow money to have something.
Right, and that's the next step is you say, all right, not only are you borrowing money for stuff that's going to depreciate and break and get used up, but now we're going to borrow money against future earnings. And we've speculated a little bit about this in our own private conversations is to say, well, what else could these people actually loan you money against that you haven't
yet earned?
Yeah,
well, what else does the person have? They don't have enough to have a house.
I'm saying, you know, when we push it one forward, why not sell the future earnings of your children? You know, why you're doing that with school debt? Why not, you know, the second your kid is born, say, hey, this kid's going to earn X number of dollars. I'm going to borrow against my kid's earning. And you say, well, that's not fair. Well, who said economics is fair, right? I mean, you're raising the kid for 18 years, 20 years, whatever. That kid owes you.
I don't think it's that far-fetched because I was reading about the way that things are being done in China, where They have a credit system, and it basically evaluates you. It evaluates everything you purchase. It evaluates your friends and your family and what they purchase and where they eat and the music they listen to. And if your friends and your family aren't very high up on the scale, people will go out and try to get somebody and actually give them money to sign on to their friendship base so they can lift their ability to borrow money or buy things or get a place to eat in a restaurant. Apparently, you have to sign up ahead of time. And if you don't have enough high enough rating on your card, you can't get a place in some of the restaurants.
So, hence, which is why the governor and I go through the drive-through window.
He's dead
Neither
now.
Neither of us.
I just want you to say he's dead now.
I wasn't talking about that governor.
Oh, okay.
It's the live governor. I don't know of which state. We'll just make one up.
Okay, just make one up.
Okay, so you're in debt. Your future is in debt. You're up to your eyeballs. Where are you going to live?
Well, a lot of people are living at home.
Hey, Mom. Well, they sold your future income.
That's true. Well, no, they didn't get that money. You got that money, but it's going to change. I think it's not just living at home, but I think I see lots of young people living together in houses, in neighborhoods where four or five people are living in some of these houses that are pretty good size. Or even not pretty good size. And even people my age living with younger people where they rent a room.
So we're talking about sharing resources.
Yes.
You say everybody doesn't need their own home. Everybody doesn't need their own car. Everybody doesn't need their own lawnmower, their own riding mower, their own whatever, their own kitchen. Right? So why don't we share these resources?
Well, we're Americans, so we're taught that we have this, you know, pioneering spirit, and we should buy one of everything for ourselves. But I think it's starting to change, and I think the economy
but
of enough.
Who's teaching us that? The guys who want to sell us stuff.
Well, but who's teaching us that we don't need to do that? And that's maybe
you
where,
and I are.
Okay, Mr. Warmke.
There you go. Listen,
well, I'm
listen
saying
closely.
From a marketing standpoint, who is teaching us? And I think it's word of mouth right now. And that's where the activism piece comes in, because we can make changes with things like this and how we consume and how we live and how we don't live that can make such a huge difference. So I want to say one thing about spiritual practice, because we've talked about a lot of things that have to do with stuff.
Okay, well, 15 seconds for spiritualism.
All right, so I think that the emergence of younger people discovering groups like pagans and Unitarian Universalists that have a religious group that come together. I think there's a bankruptcy that we have in our culture around spiritualism, and it's not about religion. And so I think people are going to start discovering some of these wonderful other practices that are more rooted in nature and real life.
Okay, well, with that thought, you've been listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke. We want to thank our producer, Adam Rich. Hey, Adam, didn't you win an Emmy, Adam? Hey, congratulations. Thank you for just spending a little bit of time with us. And as your grandmother hopefully told you, the secret to a happy and sustainable life is...
stop picking on Adam, clean up your own mess, and eat your vegetables.
Right. Well, thank you a lot. Till next time.
Mother Earth will sing, and her children will be healed.
You can find more information on living sustainably in our unsustainable world at BlueRockStation.com.